President Bush has delivered his keynote speech as part of this week's state visit to Britain. In a 45-minute address, the president touched on key U.S. policy issues, including Iraq and the Arab-Israeli conflict. He was speaking at London's banqueting hall, but it was a speech for a wider audience.
It's been said that those who live near a police station find it hard to believe in the triumph of violence. In the same way, free peoples might be tempted to take for granted the orderly societies we have come to know. Europe's peaceful unity is one of the great achievements of the last half century. And because European countries now resolve differences through negotiation and consensus, there's sometimes an assumption that the entire world functions in the same way. But let us never forget how Europe's unity was achieved by Allied armies of liberation and NATO armies of defense. And let us never forget, beyond Europe's borders, in a world where oppression and violence are very real, liberation is still a moral goal, and freedom and security still need defenders.
Joining us now is John Micklethwaite, U.S. editor of The Economist magazine. He's with us from London, and good of you to join us today.
Thank you.
And John, President Bush obviously speaking before a fairly respectful audience did not heckle him as he was when he visited Australia, and perhaps that's why he did not address a parliament in London today. But that part of the speech in particular seemed to be addressed at his critics in Europe.
It did. I mean, Bush went quite a long way to try and give the impression to the Europeans that he wasn't so much a change man, but a more sympathetic figure than they thought he was. He mentioned the word multilateral quite a lot. He talked about the United Nations, albeit calling about reform. And he tried to set across a philosophy in kind of European terms. I mean, he went back to the Second World War, which is always a popular card to play, at least in Britain. Perhaps less so on the continent.
And he went back to cite some moral exemplars from British history in particular, including people who fought to end slavery and put himself, by implication, and the current prime minister, in the same boat.
Yes, and Blair almost immediately returned the compliment, appearing in Parliament and talking about, really, you know, we have enemies and we have friends, and now's the time to back our friends and fight our enemies. And so they seem to be sort of talking with one voice, not for the first time. But in fact, so far, what he said went across pretty well, not least because he called Britain America's closest friend. And that was, you know, we're always suckers for that sort of thing. And it went out incredibly well.
John Micklethwaite of The Economist. We're discussing President Bush's speech earlier today in London. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And the president certainly did address the issue that most of the people were interested in hearing, and most of the demonstrators who are appearing against him are enraged about, and that is the situation in Iraq. He vowed to stick with the policy, repeated some of the aspects of some of the goals of bringing freedom and democracy to Iraq and how it might transform the Middle East. He's made speeches like that here in this country in the past few days. Let's listen to an excerpt from the speech now, where he addresses his determination to stick the course in Iraq, and then goes on to address the Middle East.
We did not charge hundreds of miles into the heart of Iraq and pay a bitter cost of casualties and liberate 25 million people only to retreat before a band of thugs and assassins. We will help the Iraqi people establish a peaceful and democratic country in the heart of the Middle East. And by doing so, we will defend our people from danger. A forward strategy of freedom must also apply to the Arab-Israeli conflict. This is a difficult period in a part of the world that has known many. Yet our commitment remains firm. We seek justice and dignity. We seek a viable, independent state for the Palestinian people, who have been betrayed by others for too long. We seek security and recognition for the State of Israel, which has lived in the shadow of random death for too long. These are worthy goals in themselves, and by reaching them, we will also remove an occasion and excuse for hatred and violence in the broader Middle East.
John Micklethwaite, a few moments after that, the president got more specific in terms of what should happen next in the Middle East. Israel, he said, should freeze settlements, construction, dismantle unauthorized outposts, end the daily humiliation of the Palestinian people, and not prejudice final negotiations with the placements of walls and fences. Does this represent any kind of a substantive change in his policy?
I think not substantive, but I think you can spot at least a tiny fragment of change. It was a much stronger speech on Israel than you might have expected in America. But yet, by the same token, he did come back and hammered Arafat and upbraided European leaders for continuing to deal with him. So it was a fairly nuanced change. I think probably slightly more change on the Middle East than there was in Iraq. On Iraq, basically, he said the same thing. What was unusual to people this side of the Atlantic was he put it in much more romantic, emotional terms, I think, than what they're used to hearing. Typically over here, wrongly or rightly, Bush is stereotyped in much more brutal terms. And here you had a man committing himself to democracy. And you also had a man who we shouldn't forget, you know, the polls over the weekend in Britain showed that 37% or 40%, I think, of Britons regarded him straightforwardly as stupid. You suddenly had a man putting this across in an articulate, even sometimes poetic way. And that did have an effect. But I do think there hasn't been a substantial change in policy. It's more to do with style than substance. But that style does matter because of Bush's reputation over here, which is obviously not as good as he would want it to be.
We just have a little over a minute left, but I did want to ask you about the reception to this visit. Obviously, we're hearing about the anti-war demonstrators and the big march planned for tomorrow. The public has been reported to be deeply skeptical of the president's visit. You're there in London. What are you seeing?
I think, in a sense, the sort of news cycle's changing a bit. I think today, Bush, on the whole, had a pretty good day, and the speech seemed to go down well. At least on the British news, there's quite a lot of pictures of people wandering around with T-shirts saying, love ya, W, which is almost unheard of, certainly over the last 6 months. There are signs of protest gathering a bit this evening, and there's obviously going to be a big protest tomorrow. But rather cleverly, either by accident or design, the expectations were so low that merely the fact that he's here and he's seeming more reasonable, he's seeming more articulate, and he's seeming slightly more multilateral than most people had expected. These things are all going down relatively well with the British public, as far as one can guess, but that's purely a sort of view for one person watching the television. But the headlines coming across are very much of that term.
We'll continue, obviously, to follow the president's visit, and as you suggest, John Micklethwaite, news cycles do change quickly, but we appreciate your time today.
Thank you very much.
John Micklethwaite is U.S. editor of The Economist magazine. He was with us from London, England, where the President Bush spoke just hours ago. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.